part two of the Scouting Post 2016 NHL Draft OHL-centric podcast with my special guests Dominic Tiano and Reed Duffy. When I last left you, Skype had cut off, and unfortunately Dom was in mid-stride talking about Markus Niemelainen. So we're going to let him pick that up and talk about Markus here at the beginning of this second hour. And then we got some other good things, including a debate about Sean Day. And we will get back and revisit Max Jones. So let's pick up the podcast where we left off when we reconnected. Apologies for that. And again, thank you for listening to Hour 1. If you missed Hour 1, I encourage you to go back and check the link on the blog and go ahead and listen to it. It's been a real treat for me to bring you these two. And so without further ado, let's get back in with Dominic Tiano.
So to finish up on Niemelainen, to me, the talent, the toolbox, the hockey sense, the skating, everything is there. I just question how much anybody saw of it when at least early and through most of the season, he was getting very limited ice time to be able to show that. And from everything I've heard at the under 18s, he was exceptionally well there. And I think that's the type of player that he truly is. I think he's vastly underrated. And if I was running a draft, I'd pick him hands down before I would pick Logan Stanley.
Wow. Very, very interesting. And yeah, I'm with you on all counts. You can't teach a 6'5" guy how to be 6'5", and someone who can skate as well as he can, and then he's smart too. I just think it's a no-brainer. Okay, let's go to our next segment. And this, for some that have seen the teaser on Twitter, this might be what they came for. Here we go. All right, we got a little People's Court music here. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to have the great debate today. Okay, and the guy we're debating is Sean Day. Over on the prosecution is Mr. Reed Duffy. Reed is going to tell you why Sean Day is not a good investment in the top two rounds. Over on the defense side, Mr. Dom Tiano is going to present the case that he is a potential steal in the top 60. So, with that in mind, let's have the great debate. And let me kill the music here. So, all right, Reed, since you're the prosecution and they get to go first,
can we switch sides?
this is going to be interesting. Sean Day was the exceptional player status, and Kirk, we've talked about him before. Dom, you and I have talked about him before. Exceptional, the exception, what is he? And I still think we're at a point where we really have no idea what Sean Day is. You can see as a defenseman, he has a really nice set of talent, but we never see enough of it in a run. He can never seem to put it all together back to back to back to back. He gets lost in coverage. He's a kid with size but doesn't always use it. His hockey IQ comes and goes. You'll see him make a beautiful outlet pass out of his own zone, and then in the same situation on the next shift, it's a giveaway straight up in the middle for a scoring chance going the opposite direction. It's just consistently inconsistent on Sean Day. And I think there's the school of thought that he can put it all together and the school of thought that he won't put it all together. And both are equally as valid because, again, we really don't know what Sean Day is, despite the fact he's been in the OHL for as long as he has, since he was came in as the exceptional player status. So I really believe that at 49, Sean Day, with what could be on the board, looks like a reach. We just don't know enough to this point. Even with all the skills, the inconsistencies, and the lax in concentration, the fact that really Sean Day's not broken out on any sort of the international scene as well as a junior player, despite the exceptional status, He had a lot to live up to on the exceptional status side. He just hasn't gotten there.
Okay, the prosecution rests. Defense, you're up.
Well, oh, you too. I'll get even for you. Look, it's simply this when it comes to Sean Day. Well, it all comes down to, in his best interest, it probably, in hindsight, would have been better if he had not gone after exceptional status and progressed along with players his own age. So he dominated for another year, so be it. But I think it would have better prepared him for the Ontario Hockey League. That said, what's done is done. We know that there have been family issues, and I don't want to go into detail in that on here about that. It's all out there for everybody to check. And that played with his head a little bit. So, you know, by his own admission, his head wasn't always into the game. And, you know, I can understand that to a point. He himself was questioning, you know, his weight issues being a problem. Well, yeah, you know, Kirk, you and I had a discussion about this, and, you know, you brought up Frankie Petrano and his situation. You know, he went out and did something about it. It may be too little too late for Sean Day for this draft, but, you know, he went out and did the same thing. He went out and, you know, from February on, I believe he lost something like 20 pounds. The last month of the season, we really began to see a different Sean Day, and especially in the playoffs against Barry, we saw a different player. Does that mean he's put it all together? No. It just means that, you know, maybe he's beginning to understand this is what I have to do. There's no arguing if he ever put it all together and had every ounce of his skill and natural ability and had the hockey sense and put it all together. You know, I honestly believe we'd be talking about the best defenseman available in the draft. It just hasn't happened for him. But like I say, he started to show that he's beginning to understand what he needs to do. And like I said, maybe too little too late for him for this year. But if he continues to do that and continues to work and continues to understand what he needs to do, that I think we have a player with a very high reward here. People refer to him as low risk, high reward. I refer to him as high risk, high reward, because like Reed says, we really don't know right now. All we can go is, what have you done with me lately? And I take that last month of the season, or that last 3 to 4 weeks, plus his playoff performance where he looked like a different player, and I'm leaning towards maybe this kid is starting to get it. Would I take a gamble at him at 49? Absolutely. I may not have said that back in January or February, but today I really, really consider it.
Okay. Well, as the judge, I'm not going to render a verdict. I'm going to turn it over to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury. You've heard the cases. Here's some instructions or some things to consider if you're the jury. One, when you only have 3 picks in the top 50 and then not another one until 135 and until you're choosing again, you got to make sure you get max bang for the buck. Is Sean Day worth that risk? Again, my position has been pretty well known all along. It's one thing to come into Team Canada training camp overweight, not make the Ivan Hlinka under 18 team back in August. That was a message sender. Didn't lose the weight. Took him till February. Like the change and the change of direction. That's good. But he wasn't named to the under 18 team in Grand Forks. another message sent. So, you know, at the end of the day, great skater, you know, great tools. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you have to decide. Is that someone you take a shot at? Because if he doesn't fix it, and he didn't show enough sense of an urgency to fix it when he knew coming in what the challenge was, you could be sitting on a bus there. But gentlemen, very well argued. I love it.
I just like to add one more point there, okay. Kurt, if I may.
You may.
With the
you may
three
approach
picks.
The bench, sir. Counsel may approach the bench.
Thanks, Your Honor. You bring up the three picks in the first two rounds and don't pick again until 135,
correct.
I believe it is.
Yes.
It's too bad that August 15th is the deadline, but there is another hold in the attempt to sign Jimmy Vesey, who in my mind is a first round pick. If somehow that could be changed so it happened before the draft, and you had Jimmy Vesey in the fold, you could afford to use that 49th pick on a Sean Day. It's just something that I wanted to throw out there. I'm not saying Jimmy Vesey's heading to Boston, but, you know, there's a very good chance. And I like to think that the Bruins think that there's a chance and maybe, just maybe, that plays into a decision-making.
Any rebuttal, prosecution?
Yeah, I think even with Vesey in the fold, you're trading off a left winger for a project defenseman at 49. Man, would I love to have another pick. Maybe if we could find a way, somebody wants Alex Kokolchev, somebody wants a prospect and grab a pick in the third round somewhere that Sean Day would fall. If you told me I could get him in the third round, you've got my ear. At 49, I just don't know that I can go there on a project when we're trying to really stock up for the future. Dom's right that if he puts it all together, there's a very impressive player in there. I just don't know that I can go there. I want to be able to, but with what I've seen out of him and his history at this point, I just don't think I can get there.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it's now in your able hands. You've heard it. You've heard it both sides. You've heard the thoughts. You know, it's up to you to decide whether you want to keep riding the Sean Day train or maybe hop off. But since we're talking about Sean Day, the one thing that's kind of bothers me about all this is, you know, you see a lot of it on Twitter. Sean Day this, Sean Day that. Oh, great skater. Oh, you know, exceptional status. And I say to myself, hey, what about Alex DeBrincat? What about Adam Maskren? What about Will Bitten? Here's three players that fans aren't all up in arms about. And it has something to do with all of them being under 5'10", and in Maskren's case, DeBrincat's case, significantly below that. But am I off here, or can these guys play, man? Can they just flat out play and score? So let's talk about these three, and let's pitch it over to Dom to start this one.
Boy, DeBrincat, the kid can play. And I heard it all last season. You know, well, he's playing with Connor McDavid. He's playing with Connor McDavid. What can he do without Connor McDavid? And I actually had to shut people up and post the stats that showed that Alex DeBrincat put up more points playing without Connor McDavid than he did playing with Connor McDavid. Well, and this is while McDavid was out with his injury that everybody knows about. So, man, this guy is fearless. He will do whatever needs to be done. And I think when he was injured at the World Junior Championships, people got to miss out on watching just how good this player can be. I mean, he's got heart, he's got tenacity, he's fearless, and the kid can score. All he does is continue to put pucks in the net, and, you know, real deal. To me, he's a first-rounder, no questions asked. I would not hesitate. Sorry, go ahead, Reed.
I was just going to chime in on DeBrincat really quickly that I agree with everything you said. Wicked shot, wicked release. He can fill the net. And I said earlier, I hate comparables, but maybe without the speed. I see a little bit of Frankie Vetrano there, somebody who, you know, flying under the radar a little bit, but people, when they finally get a good look at him, are going to be really sorry that they didn't pay more attention, because there is a whole boatload of talent in Alex DeBrincat, and you give him a chance with the right guys at the next level, open space, you can't give him anything, because he will find the back of the net. I have no doubt about that.
What about Adam Maskren?
Man, gotta love that kid's shot, boy. He's underrated and probably ranked too low, but he's a little guy. I think he's like 5'9", but he's 200 plus pounds. He's built like a tank.
Yeah, and he's not fat, right? He's not out of shape. No. He's solid tank like build.
Oh yeah,
exactly. His lower body strength and his center of gravity makes him impossible to knock off the putt. I mean, you know, we talked about Logan Brown earlier and how hard he is to knock off the putt. Maskren's the same way, but because of different reasons. He doesn't have that bulk and that strength that Brown does, but it's that lower body strength and that center of gravity that makes him impossible to knock off. And that shot, boy, you know, it's got to be up there in I would say the top half dozen in the league. I'm not just talking about draft eligible players. I love his shot. I love his work ethic. You know, he wins battles along the walls. He's not afraid to go in there. And, you know, he's in his rookie season, he suffered with consistency issues, and, you know, he needs to work a little bit on his defense, but, you know, this guy has the potential to put up goals in the next level. I really believe that.
So Redline, we gave him 22. We love him. I'm a fan as well, but I've only done film study. But we're talking second overall pick in the 2014 OHL priority selection, if I'm not mistaken. Second overall. So what the heck's going on with teams? They don't seem to have any faith in him in the first round. Some teams are saying he's not even a second rounder for him. That just seems absurd to me. Well, what's going on here?
Yeah, no, I can't figure it out personally. Watching him in person, you just get this unbelievable sense that he has what they call the it factor. There's just something about this kid that he's always right there, right around the puck. He can find it, and he can do some magical things with it. And you were talking about the build on him. Dom, have you ever stood like in a hallway or anything around the rink with him when he's out of equipment?
I got, I think, maybe within 20 feet of him when he was out of equipment, but boy, oh boy, is he built.
Yeah, we were, where our TV truck is, usually the opposition team, whoever's playing against the Bulldogs, plays soccer like 5 feet from our TV truck, which I know makes the producers a little crazy, but we walked by, and I was looking for Adam Maskren, and I couldn't pick him out because I didn't know which one he was. And when one of the Rangers pointed him out to me, they always used to talk about guys like Marty Zelina. I remember a feature on him, and Sidney Crosby, the size of the legs. This kid's got tree trunks for legs. That's where that speed, that power stride comes from. And when he gets into that shot, it's a full body deal. He drives off his legs and fires the puck. It's not any sort of fluke. There's no, you know, wizard behind the curtain here. This is the real deal when you look at somebody who can fire a hockey puck because he's built to play the game. And that's the kind of thing that I think NHL teams need to take more of a look at, because it's not the undersized part, I think, needs to be kind of put off to the side in terms of height for Maskren.
Definitely.
It's not going to affect what he does at the next level. He's built to play the game. And if there are teams that have him ranked in the third round, I'm just mind-boggled with that sort of rating. I would say that we talked about, you know, Sean Day at the 49th pick. If Adam Mastrin is on the board at 49, I kind of hope Don Sweeney runs to the podium, speaking as a Bruins fan.
No, I have a lot of time for the kid, no doubt.
He also has an uncanny knack to find open space.
Yes, he does.
You watch sometimes and you think, boy, how did he get there? It's like he's nowhere in your vision and all of a sudden he's there. If he played with an elite puck distributor, you know, I like to go back to the days of Hall and Oates, you know. His shot is just that good. If he had an elite puck distributor, man, that guy could put pucks in nets.
He had a moment against the Bulldogs where Ryan McInnes brought the puck into the zone, and McInnes was doing his keep away deal where he had to reach out. Mastrin had just come over the boards. He was in the middle of three Bulldogs making his way into the offensive zone. Something all of a sudden just clicks in him. He puts it into fifth gear, drives straight through the middle of the ice. He's wide open, screams to McInnes, who delivers a perfect pass onto his tape, and he hammered the thing past Connor Hicks. There was just an unbelievable sense that he saw the open space, he filled the open space, and the puck might have been on his stick for an eighth of a second.
Yeah, very, very quick release, definitely.
Did you hear that? That was a gong. I hit it a little soon. I got to stop with these sound effects, but darn it, I can't help myself. That was a gong. The good news for Will Bitton is he's a heck of a player. The bad news is he plays on a gong show, the Flint Firebirds. Talk about whether that has hurt him in his draft standing, because no one's talking about Will Bitton. Go, Reed, you're up.
Boy, you talk about a kid that can absolutely fly, and he can do it without the puck on his stick or with the puck on his stick, which is a talent that I think is a lot of times underrated. This is a kid that even when he's got it, the puck, he can get into full flight, and his full flight is something special. The hands are there in spurts. The goal scoring is there in spurts. Pretty good shot, pretty good hands, fairly good defensive awareness. Overall, the reason I think he stays out of the first round is the size. He's not built like Mastrin is, and he doesn't score like Mastrin or DeBrincat does. The speed will get him into a fairly high spot in the second round, and as he develops, he's got a chance to play his way into being an impact player at the next level. He's the guy that has the tools. He's got to be more consistent. He's got to get out of the gong show, and he's got to find his way to improve the shot. And, you know, you could say it about all young players, improve his defensive awareness a bit, and then he becomes a real threatening player.
Okay, question for Dom. If the Bruins trade out of 29, and let's say Marcus Niemelainen's not there, but Will Bitton is he in the discussion for Boston, do you think, in the early second round? Let's talk picks 30 to 40, assuming if they trade out of 29, they're picking somewhere between, not 30, but 31 and 40. We assume that's what they would drive to get. They would probably have a good, solid 7-8 players in that range that they'd be okay trading out of the first to get. You think Bitten's one of them?
I think he's one of them. You could throw in, if he drops out of the first round, he's like right on the edge. A guy like Boris Tkachuk, the Sault Ste. Marie. To me, Mastrin is there. You know, I have him as a high second. Maybe Jordan Kyrou from the Sun Sting. You know,
what about Nathan Bastian? Let's talk Nathan Bastian. He's a guy that could be kind of hovering around that second round range, no?
Yeah, he's another guy there who will be there. To me, he will be there. You know, it's funny because I asked a question on Twitter way back in January about which is the best line in the Ontario Hockey League at that time. And there were actually people who said, you know, don't count out Bastion, Nylander, and McLeod out of Mississauga. And they were that good as a trio. He's a smart hockey player. He knows how to put the puck in the net. He thinks the game defensively. He's not quite at the level that McLeod is in terms of anticipation, but he does create turnovers. He's a big body. He's not soft, but he doesn't go out of his way to play physical. He's got great playmaking skills. He's not afraid to drive the net. So he's got some tools. I think Bastion, when you're talking that early second, is probably further away than, or more of a project than your Boris Tkachuk or your Adam Mascarin type guys that could possibly be there.
Okay, Reed, I'm going to give you two names. Thanks, Dom. I that's great. Reed, I'm going to give you two names. I want you to just kind of, we don't have to go into too much detail on them, but just kind of, hit the wave tops on what they represent. And then, Dom, I'm going to come over back to you for two names. These are all guys I think are potentially in the second round and could get some love, especially this first name I'm going to give you, Reed, and that's Victor Mete, and then I'm going to ask you to talk Taylor Radish. Go.
Victor Mete, I absolutely love the kid. He's not obviously the biggest player, but he is so fast. He's so quick, and he makes great decisions with the puck at a really high speed, kind of the same thing I was talking about with Bitten. Mete doesn't miss a beat with a puck on his stick. Silky, silky, smooth player. Defensively, he can be a little bit of an adventurer, but he's got a bit of the bulldog mentality in him, and that he will hunt after the puck. He will get after players. He's not scared. He's just not very big. So that will work against him. But if you're looking for a puck-moving defenseman with speed, who can run a power play, who can shoot, who can do all those type of things, I really like what he brings moving forward in that role, as long as you don't ask him to do more than that role. Taylor Radish, and Kirk, you sent us an email to set this podcast up where you described him as a toolsy guy. Right on the money. He's got all the tools that you could look for. He's got pretty good size, good shot, pretty good speed. He's aware of what's going on the ice. You're not going to catch him really out of position. I don't know that there's anything that he does that will blow anyone away other than maybe his shot that is quite a nice shot and he can fill the back of the net. But he's just, I think of him as kind of an under-the-radar consistent player, and that he does the same things. You get the same game out of him. He'll go to the net. He'll go to the corners. He'll play his position on the wing. He'll play it smart. He'll play it with all the efficiency that you could look for. But will he ever be the guy? Will he ever break into that next level of being a true high-end sniper? I don't know. He could be a really nice piece on eventually a top nine winger with a bit of speed that can score. And those kind of guys, as we're seeing, are becoming invaluable in the NHL as a depth piece. So I don't think that's a bad thing for Taylor Radish at all. He's got a little bit more upside than that. But I think, much like Mete, if you put him in the right role and don't ask him to be more than that, you could be very pleasantly surprised with the outcome.
Awesome. Okay, Dom, over to you. Let's talk Cam Dineen and Tyler Parsons, if you would, good sir.
That's his boy.
Oh, boy, oh boy, Cam Dineen. I have to tell you that you and I and Reed have talked about him throughout the season, and I told this story 101 times. I saw him very early in the season, and I don't know what it was, but something told me that this kid's got something. And
no,
his vision.
Okay. He's back. We got you back. We lost you a little bit. Oh, no.
Oh. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue.
Okay. His vision is unbelievable. I would say it's bordering on elite. His passing and playmaking ability are up there amongst the best. He's not the fastest skater, but he's a smooth skater. He gets from point A to point B. He's calm under pressure, makes a great outlet pass. You know, he was right there with Sagachev in the defenseman scoring leaders. I believe it was one point back he finished. Defensively, he knows to play the position. He very rarely gets caught out of position. You know, I do a thing where I have a draft eligible player of the month throughout the season, and he was my player of the month twice. He was actually the only back-to-back winner there. He's been named the OHL Rookie of the Month, the OHL Defenseman of the Month. He's got all the tools. And I think if he was an inch taller and maybe a little bit faster on his skates, we could see this guy as breaking into the first round. I personally have him ahead of Logan Stanley. So, you know, that's how much I love the guy. And it's funny because way back, I think it was before Christmas, I messaged you, Kurt, because I got home late from a game in Owen Sound, and I had PVR'd a couple of games and got up in the morning. I'm making breakfast, and I got our friend Reed there calling a Hamilton North Bay game. And I'm in the kitchen, and it was during the intermission. And I'm listening to Reed talk with sorry, Reed, I forget your partner's name there now off the top of my head.
I got two. It would either be Troy or Norm.
Troy. It was Troy. And we're talking about Cam Dineen, and Reed says, you know, I talked to Kirk Ludeke and Don Piano about him, and they said, keep an eye on him. And, boy, he's exactly what they said he is. And I had to message you right away. Hey, you know, I actually had to rewind it to make sure I heard it right. But this kid is exactly what I thought he would be. Like I said, if he was had a touch more speed and was maybe an inch taller, we'd be talking about him as a very early second, maybe into the first round.
He's a rookie winner that night, too.
Yes, he did. I remember that because I wanted to bring it up to you. And I wish I had the stats in front of me, but unfortunately I don't. But, you know, when you look at a player like Dineen, for the offense he put up from the back end on a Stan Butler coach team, boy, that's you know, if people don't know Stan Butler as a coach, look him up because he's one of the best defensive-minded coaches we'll ever have in the entire Canadian Hockey League. So for Dineen to put up and have the respect and the confidence from the coach to be able to go out and do what he did just speaks wonders about him. So, you know, I'm a big fan, huge, huge fan. You know, personally, I don't think he'll be there for the Bruins at 49. I hope so, and I hope that they would take him, but I don't think he would be there.
Yeah.
Tyler Parsons, and, you know, we had this discussion at the beginning of the season. Boy, London had a powerhouse, and they were looking like they were going to be unbeatable, and you know, I made no secret about it at the beginning of the season. The only question mark with London was Tyler Parsons as the number one goalie. And boy, did he answer that bell. He had just a spectacular season and an even better OHL playoff and run through the Memorial Cup. I mean, for a guy who was undrafted in the OHL and signed as a free agent to come on like he did this season, he's the real deal. But, you know, I probably would have had him fifth coming into the season among OHL goalies, but he is unquestionably number one, no competition. And I think American fans will be glad to see him at the World Juniors next year, because he should be the starter there.
Very good. Yeah, no, he came through big time. That's kind of what had been holding London back, you know, in years past. You know, they always had these powerhouses. You got to give the Hunters credit, man. They know how to build teams, but their goalies were just not quite there to make the big saves. And you can't win these games in track meets. You know, you gotta be able to keep the puck out of the net. So yeah, no doubt on Parsons. What else?
He just, you know, he plays so calm and so cool in there that, you know, he lets the puck come to him, and, you know, sometimes, and he can be acrobatic. Sometimes he'll look like he's out of it and there's no way he's going to get there, and all of a sudden he makes that save and you go, boy, how did he get to that? And there was one in particular in the Memorial Cup stands out that, you know, there was a scramble in front of him to his left, and all of a sudden the puck went to his right, and there was a wide open cage. And how he got over there and got his right toe on that puck and stopped it was beyond me. So, like, I mean, he's acrobatic, he's quick. But he's also calm and patient. Lets everything come to him. He doesn't force things. So, you know, where he goes, I don't know. I'm not very good with predicting where goalies go in a draft, Kurt. So, you know, is he a second rounder? I don't know. Like I said, I'm not very good
at predicting where goalies go. He is for us in Redline, I'll tell you that much. And we like him a lot. We wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the number one goalie off the board. I mean, you know, not saying that will happen. He's not our number one rated goaltender. That would be Philip Gustafson. Wouldn't be surprised if Parsons gets the call, because he's got those NHL physical attributes and he's proven he can make the big save, and why the heck not? Reed, did you have anything you wanted to add on this, or are we going to go ahead and move to our last real official segment of this podcast, which is running long, but I hope people are enjoying it. I mean, it's just, this stuff's gold, and I don't think, you know, people can get this all in one place. So I really appreciate your time, guys.
Well, I'm enjoying doing this. No, I echo everything that was just said on Tyler Parsons. I couldn't possibly add anything more to that. I think that was great analysis on Dom's part.
Okay, so let's talk about the next ones. We're talking longer timeline, but potentially bigger payoffs. First guy that jumps to mind is Giovanni Smith. And, right now, if you look at rankings, Bruins are not, you know, they would have to take him at 49, which is not where he's projected. But there's just something about this guy. I've talked to NHL scouts that are based in Ontario, and they said when it came to consistency and just game in, game out, maybe not having this high-end, eye-popping offensive element that jumped out at you, but just in terms of being a tough, tough guy to play against, rugged, nasty, just really agitating, abrasive kind of player, they said there weren't many better than Giovanni Smith of the Guelph Storm this year. So curious on your thoughts, guys, on what he brings to the table.
Well, you're talking about a kid that's effort, effort, effort. And, I mean, he was over 20 goals and 146 penalty minutes, I think it was, on a Guelph Storm team that just never really got untracked this season. And he was one of the bright spots for that team. It's impossible to ignore the potential that he brings moving forward. He's already a physically mature player, 6'2", 6'3", somewhere in the 205 to 210 region, I believe. Just built like a house, loves to play a physical style of game. I mean, if the president of the Boston Bruins has a say in what's going on at the draft table, I got to imagine Jovani Smith is up the board, because you're not just talking about a kid that's a physical winger. You're talking about a kid that's a physical winger that can play the game, score goals, make plays, and would be an absolute agitator at that size, who is not afraid to get in anybody's face. He's a character kid. And like I said, for a Guelph Storm team that just never got it going this year, to be a real bright spot for that organization and somebody that fan base. I was there when Hamilton went into Guelph this season, and the fan base loves Jovani Smith. They go crazy every time he touches the puck. Like, it is just that he's got, again, we talk about it factor. He's got that to him that he can draw people in. You want to watch him play, and you want to see him succeed. So he's a kid that I am very, very high on.
Awesome. Dom?
Totally agree. He is the prototypical Bruin. That simple.
Wow. Well, hey, less is more, right? Let's talk about Cliff Pooh. Or unless you want to go ahead and follow up on that. Go ahead and follow up on that.
No, there's not much to add to what Reed said. It's he's everything he said and maybe more. You know, he's the younger brother of Jamel Smith. You know, it's surprising how many people don't know that, who I believe was drafted by Dallas.
Correct.
But
I've been seeing him down here in Cedar Park for their farm team.
No, but in a way, they are polar opposites when it comes to the game. But you know, I think Reed touched on it when you're playing in Guelph. I wouldn't hesitate to say that if he was playing in London, and let's say Matthew Tkachuk's spot, that the guy would have pumped goals in left, right, and center. You know, he has the ability to put the puck in the net. Plus all the physical attributes that Reed mentioned. But, you know, you can't underestimate how much of an effect it has playing on a lesser team, like it did with Will Bitton and Flint, or what it does with Smith and Guelph. And I'm sure Reed can speak to, you know, in Hamilton's case, there are a couple of players that are probably lower ranked than that they should be because of where the team was this season. And, you know, would I pick him at 49? No, I'd be more comfortable in the third round right now, but I don't know that. I'd have to know who else was on the board at 49. But if I go by who I think is going to be there, then I wouldn't take him at 49. But you know, that's just my own personal opinion.
Let me just put a quick thought in your head too. What would other teams around the league say a couple of years from now when Jovani Smith would come in with a Boston Bruins team? What other teams around the league, and specifically in our division, do when you have to face a line that could have Bielski on one side and Jovani Smith on the other side?
Oh boy! Oh boy! It's funny. It's funny that you mentioned Bielski, because you know they're similar in so many ways. Yet I think Smith would be more of an agitator and more physical than even Bielski is. So it would be interesting, that's for sure, Reed. But you'd have to really convince me to take him at 49. Again, it depends on who else is on the board. But if I stick to my own list, which is what I like to do, because we have to defend what we put out there, then, you know, I'd have to pass on him at 49. Unfortunately, You know, the Bruins don't have an early third because that's where I think he'll go. But you never know. As Kirk mentioned earlier, you trade down from that 29 into a high 30 and pick up a third-round pick. Yeah, I'd be all for him. It's not that I don't like Jovani Smith. It's just at 49, there are other options that I prefer ahead of him.
Okay. Cliff Pooh. People love to say his name, but what kind of player
is he? Oh, man. When he gets the puck on his stick, I love being in the crowd and they start chanting his name because it's funny and it's amazing that how much they actually love this kid, Kirk. The kid has speed, and, one of the top penalty killers in the OHL this season. And it's not just that he's a top penalty killer. He's also an offensive threat when it comes to the PK. Him and Max Jones out together on the PK are just dynamite. I don't think you'll find a better duo that can kill a penalty and create offense. And, I mean, fans got a glimpse of it in the Memorial Cup. They constantly think offense. Now, you know, the question is about people question about his numbers. Well, when you're playing behind the big three in Marner, Dvorak, and Tkachuk, and you have Marner, Tkachuk, and Dvorak playing full 2 minute power play time, and you have Aaron Berisha taking up a minute 45 on the other wing. Marner usually plays the point. There isn't much time for these guys to get out on the power play. So, I absolutely love the player. He's a smart player. He's tenacious. He does what he has to do to win a game, whether it be on offense or whether it be on defense. He'll be a fan favorite no matter where he ends up.
Okay, so let's ask the question. Greatest podcast moderator for the OHL in history, Kirk Ludeke. And here we go. Survey says, All right, another failed sound effect. Max Jones, dude. Didn't even ask about Max Jones. How could we have gone this far and not talked about Max Jones? So, wow, this was as good a time as any. And you brought him up talking about Cliff Pooh. So, Reed, I'm going to let you lead because I know how kind of Dom feels about Max Jones. So we'll let the positivity maybe start, and then we'll shift it over for maybe an alternate point of view.
I feel he's kind of enigmatic in a lot of ways. I like the tools he brings, and I mean he's an excellent skater, and you really enjoy watching him. And you can see how he could become a fan favorite in a market really quickly. Very aggressive, which is a positive and a negative because it almost his aggressive nearly borders on that predatory. And of course, we've seen that he goes over that line. The danger with Max Jones is his game relies on him walking the line. And when your game relies on that, there's that tendency, and we've seen it out of Brad Marchand, to fall over on the wrong side of the line. He's got to be able to rein it in those big moments and kind of have a better understanding that there's a level that he goes to that's too far, and he can't keep going there, or he's going to make a really bad name for himself really quickly. The tools are there. The skills are there. I like him as a hockey player. I like what he brings on a penalty kill. I think there's an element of offensive ability there that may not be tapped into quite yet because, as Dom said, a lot of the numbers for guys on London could be a little bit skewed because they didn't see the kind of power play time because of the plethora of talent that was on that roster. But there's something there that could work for him. Just he's got to stop crossing that line.
Dom?
And I'll echo everything Reed said, especially the offensive talent, because while the big three were away at the World Juniors, Jones stepped up and he delivered for London. And he showed that he's more than capable of putting up the points. But to me, the issue has always been, as Reed called it, that predatory style. And I'm not a fan of it, and I'm not sure. And I mean, you can look at the history of the game. Players that have had that mentality seldom change, and you know, it becomes a part of them, and it follows them wherever they go. And unfortunately for Jones, he already has that image about him throughout the Ontario Hockey League. And when you go to visiting arenas, he's hated for it. And despite being a talented hockey player, people look at that predatory style that he plays, and I'm not a big fan of it. If he could dial it back a couple of notches and play south of the border or south of that line, by all means. But you know, me personally, I'm hesitant because of that style. And Reed brings up Brad Marchand. You know, it's funny because Marchand took it upon himself to realize that you know, I need to change. His suspension this season, his 3-game suspension, cost and hurt the team. Could with Brad Marchand in the lineup, could they have gotten an extra point to get them into the playoffs for those 3 games that he sat out? Brad Marchand gets it. I'm not so sure that Max Jones gets that.
That's the question, right, Dom? Does he end up realizing that like Brad Marchand did, or does he wind up unfortunately going more of a Steve Downey route?
That's the million-dollar question. I just don't see that he gets it. When you're suspended for 12 games through the playoffs and then come back, and you could see that he's looking for that hit, whether, you know, he's still looking for it after you could have potentially hurt your team in the playoff run. I'm not sure that he gets it, Reed. And you know, I'm leery about those guys. So, you know, to Brad Marchand's credit, he got it. He admitted to it. He takes ownership of it. I'm just not sure that Max Jones is will ever be at that level. And it's a hard thing to predict. You don't know. But that's where I stand.
So Jones is ranked 13th on the Hockey News draft preview, and that just boggles my mind because, Dom, you might recall first weekend of the season. Again, I'm looking at film. You guys are watching these games live. I believe it was against none other than the Hamilton Bulldogs, if I'm not mistaken, Reed. It was very early in the season, if not the first weekend. And Tkachuk was running wild. He wasn't scoring because Charlie Graham was playing out of his mind, as I recall, if I could recall correctly. But but Jones was a dud. Like, I kept looking for Jones, wanted to see the speed, wanted to see the, you know, just the take charge, rugged game that he had shown in spurts, you know, at times with the national team the season before. And I didn't see it. And I remember telling Dom, hey, I'm looking at Jones and I don't see anything. And he did, to his credit, put it together midseason, as you mentioned, when the big guns were away at the World Junior. But I'm just like, I'm like Public Enemy circa 1988. Don't believe the hype. So that's just me personally. I think the Bruins are probably interested in Jones at some point, but I cannot imagine them, you know, being interested around the 13 range. But because of that Hockey News preview, you're going to get – I get a lot of questions about Jones at that spot, and I just think that would be a mistake personally, but we'll see where the Bruins go.
Well, in all fairness, Kirk, I do have him ranked eighth out of the OHL, but that's all the nastiness aside. If I'm looking purely at hockey skill and talent and what I think he could bring to the next level, then he's up there. But if you include my hatred for the nasty side of the game that he brings, then, you know, he's way down on my list.
Yeah. I honestly just don't see a guy who can bring that scoring at the next level. I could be wrong. He just doesn't look like he has the sense and the creativity to do it. I mean, he's you love the speed, you love the physicality. I question whether he's got the natural vision and the creativity to be the kind of player that he's being projected. I think he's one of these guys that gets artificially inflated a little bit because he's a power forward, and people get dazzled. And I also, when I talked to Haggerty and Murphy today, I entered in the whole powerhouse theory where he, you know, his numbers are probably inflated because he's playing on such a good team. Stick him on the Saginaw Spirit, and I think you're probably seeing a different level of production. I see him more as a complimentary piece, not a big dog who's going to be a legitimate top six forward, although I do recognize he plays that heavy game and brings that speed. So I'm sure someone's going to grab him pretty early. I just don't know where that's going to happen.
And you're probably bang on in saying that complimentary piece. I don't think he's a go-to guy and ever will be. But as a complimentary piece, who can bring the physical game, can kill penalties, can skate, and I don't think he has a bad shot. He's pretty good with the puck on his stick. So I'm sure he has some offensive ability, just how much at the next level, I don't know, because it's one thing to go after OHL players, and play the way he does. It's another thing to go after NHL players, grown men, and try and play the same way. So, I mean, there's a lot of question marks when it comes to Max Jones.
Okay, guys, your favorite later round OHL values. We're approaching hour two of this, and it's been a lot of fun, but let's hit it quick and then call it a day, because you guys have put in a tremendous amount of energy and time, and I'm sure everyone appreciates it. So Reed, let's cue it up. A couple guys maybe that haven't been talked about yet. I think I have an idea of one gentleman you're going to mention on the blue line that you know up close and personally, and then we'll pitch it over to Dom.
Boy, you guys know me that well, eh? I'm going to go with three of them, and I'll be straight up front. I'm going to be a bit of a homer here. Ben, I'm going to pick two off the blue line in Hamilton. Ben Gleason is, as Dom, you just said, what a skillsy defenseman. And Evan Bouchard, who we talked about earlier, is the only reason that Ben Gleason is in Hamilton and not still in London. There just wasn't enough room on the blue line for that many offensively gifted defensemen. Gleason's downside is his defensive game still needs work, and Ben will be the first one to tell you that. He's the nephew of Tim Gleason, who a lot of people will remember from the Carolina Hurricanes and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's not his uncle whatsoever. Polar opposite players. But I love what Ben brings because he's an explosive skater. He's got a huge shot. He can run a beautiful power play from the top position in the umbrella. It's just the focus and the hockey IQ and the consistency are still developing. And you could see it from the time the Bulldogs acquired him to the end of the season. It was like looking at a different player. A lot of those negatives that he had earlier on were disappearing. You could see his passing was a lot smarter. He was picking his spots to do those long outs better. I don't know that I've seen a defenseman who can make a snap out pass from behind his own goal line to the opposition blue line with the accuracy and the pace on it that Ben Gleason produces. The other defenseman on the Hamilton blue line is Cole Candela, and I think he falls under a lot of radar because he had a wrist injury about halfway through the season. Up until that point, he might have been the most improved player on the Hamilton Bulldogs because he went from being a guy who people were looking for just for offense to being a guy that the Bulldogs could put out against opposition top lines and get solid shifts out of defensively. He was very, very impressive up until that point. He's not the biggest, he's not the fastest, but he's very consistent, and his effort is always at the high end. The other guy I like is from Sault Ste. Marie, and that's Tim Gettinger. Big kid, long reach, lanky, can skate, and I just like a lot of what that Sault Ste. Marie group is doing and how they're bringing a lot of these players along. Gettinger can score, and he can play that power forward style, and I didn't see as much of the Greyhounds as I would have liked to being in the opposite conference, but what I did see of them, obviously Sinishin stood out, Kachuk stood out, but Gettinger always caught my eye because he's big and he can play a skill game, but he also understands how to use his size. And for someone of his age, that can be a rare thing. I think that can be cultivated going forward.
Yeah, Candela was the guy I was referring to that I figured you were going to bring up. So good stuff there, Reed. Thanks so much. Okay, Dom, over to you, your late round values and sleepers.
Well, I'm going to have to get mad at Reed because Candela was the guy I was going to bring up first and foremost. But I tell you, a guy I really, really like in the late round. And people are going to say, well, he's small. But, you know, I look at Alex DeBrincat's teammate in Erie and think of Kyle Maksimovich. And, you know, he's 5'9", I think 175 pounds, soaking wet. Was a third-round pick in the OHL draft. But, boy, can this guy shoot. I mean, he finished with just over 20% shooting percentage, which is I would call elite at the OHL level. When you start hitting 20% of your shots going into the net, you're doing something right. Consistency is an asset this kid has in spades. I think he's gone twice throughout the season, just twice, going two games without registering a point. So he can consistently puts up points. He can skate, doesn't shy away from physicality. He'll drive the net. He's an Alex DeBrincat light. He does all the same things, but not to the level that DeBrincat does. And, he's learned how to play defense. He's killing penalties this year. He gets into shooting lanes, passing lanes. He blocks shots. He's come a long way. He was ranked, I think, 120 in Central Scouting's midterm rankings. I'm not sure where he ended up, but to me, he's a guy I really, really look at in later rounds. But I have to tell you that I'm a fan in the later rounds of going with somebody in Europe or somebody out of the NCAA who is going to be years away. They're going to school, getting their education while working on their game. I think you often talked about Torrey Krug as an example where the Bruins tried to get an extra pick to try and draft him, and he ended up signing as a free agent anyway. I think, to me personally, that's what I like to do. There's a far greater chance of getting a player to play in the NHL by looking at those two routes. That said, a guy that isn't ranked on any rankings that I absolutely fell in love with is another Logan DeNoble of the Peterborough Petes. Another small guy, 5'10", but he's about 195 pounds. And come the second half of this season, something with this kid just clicked. And he became an offensive catalyst for the Petes. And he got moved onto the top line, playing with Hunter Garland and help me out, Reed, Eric Cornell. You know, he's excellent on faceoffs. I believe he finished in the top five in the shooting percentage in the OHL. And this came after the midway point of the OHL season. I think in his first 30 games, he had just 3 goals and 4 assists. And then in his final 34 games, he had like 18 goals and 18 assists. So he came on like gangbusters. And I don't think he'll get drafted. Like I said, I haven't seen him on anybody's rankings. But this is a kid that I see getting an invite to a couple of NHL prospect camps and getting a look. Otherwise, he'll go back into the draft for next year.
Wow. But
they're my two.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, you know, I don't know what to say. We've put together about 2 hours worth of material, and it's awesome. I'm really honored that you guys could join us and break down the OHL. I know we didn't cover everybody, but I think we did a good, solid, deep dive into the league, and now we're exactly a week out. I mean, we're recording this on Friday night, so at this time, a week from tonight, we're gonna find out. You know, is it Dante Fabbro? Is it Charlie McAvoy? Is it Jake Bean? Or is it someone else? Maybe Logan Brown? Probably not. I think he's going to go higher. But we'll see who the Bruins get at 14. I'm confident that it's going to be that they're going to have a good player there. I think this draft has real strong depth at the top, and now it's just a matter of seeing where the OHL guys go and what order and where they end up. But just let you guys finish off with your last bit of thoughts, and then we'll call it a night. So let's start with Reed and then finish with Don.
You want thoughts on the OHL draft class or thoughts on where the Bruins are going?
Hey, whatever floats your boat, man. This is your time. This is your last shot before we close out.
Well, this is a really strong draft class out of the OHL. I think you've got at least 4 defensemen who can make a really – and probably 5 when you put Dineen in that group too – that can make impacts at the NHL level and that are really just tremendously talented hockey players. Matt Tkachuk, number 1 ranked player out of the OHL, is going to be a star. It's really been a great run of talent in the Ontario Hockey League, and it continues on. It's an incredible league for developing talent. So I'm really excited to see where a lot of these guys go and to get back to it in September and seeing the next crop come along. We've got Connor Roberts coming into Hamilton, who I'm really excited about out of Owen Sound. For the Bruins' perspective, there are draft boards all over the place. Fabbro, McAvoy. All of a sudden, in the last couple of days, you're seeing Chychrun's name drop around 12, which has got to make Don Sweeney excited, because if they get him somewhere in that range, you got to believe he would be over the moon with that. So as a Bruins fan, I'm nervous. As an OHL play-by-play guy, I am so proud to be affiliated with the league. It's just you don't get any better in terms of developing players to go to that next level. So I'm just very proud of what all those guys have accomplished and look forward to continuing to call their games down the road.
Awesome. Dom, over to you.
I agree with everything Reed said, and I will add, this is probably the best OHL draft class that we've had in quite some time. How many get picked? I don't know, but we're looking at a significant number, and probably higher than we've seen in a long, long time. As for the Bruins, my attitude has always been, you know what? We supply the fans with the information so that they can make their choices or form their own opinions. I don't like to personally form an opinion on who they should take. I like to give information to people so that they can make their own decisions. And hopefully over the last 2 hours, we've given fans, not just to the Bruins, but any team that's out there that happens to be listening, the ability to form an opinion as to who they'd like to see. To me, I'll wait until next Friday night, see who they picked, and I'll try and find the good in that and not dwell on the bad or look at, well, they left so-and-so on the board, they should have done this. Let's just concentrate on who they picked and see what we've got there as opposed to trying to compare that player to anybody else who was on the board. And if we can help one fan, Kirk, Reed, I think we've done what we set out to do here, and that's to help them form their own opinions. As far as doing this with you two guys, I mean, I could go on for hours. You know, and I hope that that we can do this again another time, Kirk, maybe even after the draft, once we've seen it all played out. But I want to say this about you personally, that fans of any team should be more appreciative of what they have for you as a source of information, and the knowledge that you bring to the game, and the uncanny ability you have to call things up from memory, where, you know, I'll have to sit here on my laptop and click and say, okay, how many points did this guy put up? And you seem to have it on the tip of your tongue, and I know it's been a tough week with you with the memorial services for your brothers in arms there that were lost due to a tragic incident, and that I believe that was just yesterday, and you're here today doing this for fans, not just of the Bruins, of every hockey fan out there that has the slightest interest in the draft, that you, sir, are a gold mine of information, and fans should be appreciative of that.
Wow. Well, beautiful. Dom, I
absolutely agree.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm humbled beyond words. It has been a true pleasure to just kind of listen to you go. I've tried to not inject myself too much because I tend to do a lot of talking, and I honestly love the personal takes. And I think the fans do too. So I think in this case, I will just thank you both from the bottom of my heart. It's been, you know, it's been great, you know, getting to know you both. And yeah, we're definitely going to do this again. Let's bring the three amigos and have us ride again after the draft, and break it down and do some analysis on who the Bruins end up with. And I think, you know, that's definitely probably what people want. But for now, I think we've done our duty, and I can't thank you enough, gentlemen. And with that, I'm going to sign off on this second of two podcasts that we've done dedicated to the Ontario Hockey League for the Scouting Post. And this is Kirk Ludeke and special guests Dom Tiano and Reed Duthie. Thank you for joining us, and may you have an enjoyable 2016 NHL Draft.